We'll call our third quarterly meeting to order. Appreciate everyone. We've got a full house. Thank you. Hope you're having a safe, fun-filled summer. Sorry that we had to cancel the retreat. And we do hope to schedule something similar, a working session, as soon as possible. And hopefully that working session will include some board training. Some of the regents, we've all indicated an interest in getting some additional training. So that's on our agenda. And then, as you know, we should have two new regents joining us in the very near future. So with that being said, I would ask our secretary, Regent Brinkley, to call the roll.
Regent Bale.
Present.
Regent Ball.
Present.
Secretary Brinkley is present. Regent Ernst.
Present.
Regent Harris.
Present.
Regent Higdon.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Vice Chair McKinney. Regent Nichols.
Present.
Regent Porter. Mr. Chair, we have nine regents present, representing a quorum of the board.
Thank you, Secretary Brinkley. Again, good morning. You have had distributed to you a special budget approval meeting minutes of June 26, 2020. Do I hear any additions or corrections to those minutes? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Regent Harris moved. Regent Ernst seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Like sign passes unanimously. Mr. President, do you have a report?
I do. Chair Higdon, thank you so much. I know the past 5 months have been trying and challenging, but I don't want to talk about that at the outset this morning, because in the past 5 months, a lot of things have happened outside of COVID-19, and given all of the doom scrolling and awfulness that we see on television, I thought a little good news would be a way to begin the meeting. So, going back the past few months, we've had several notable accomplishments by our students, our faculty, and our staff, and the organization as a whole. Last spring, several WKU alumni, as part of the Courier Journal News staff, won a Pulitzer Prize for breaking news reporting. WKU alumni and faculty have won 27 Pulitzers in total. Additionally, the School of Media finished second overall in the Hearst Journalism Intercollegiate Competition. We placed in the top eight for 27 straight years. And we also won this past spring the Hearst Photojournalism Award. This is the fourth straight year WKU has won that award. As I'm looking at one of our good alumni shooting over in the corner, the 26th time in 31 years that WKU has won the Hearst Intercollegiate Photojournalism Award. The American Society of Civil Engineers, our student chapter, was recognized with the Robert Ridgway Award. Now, you may not know what that organization is, but it's the concrete canoe team for our university. And they are the top chapter in the world. They were hoping to host this past spring the Concrete Canoe Challenge, but we will be able to host in 2022. And a huge shout out. I've visited these young people on the weekends as they've worked on their canoe. Jason Wilson, who is the program coordinator for civil engineering, just does a remarkable job, serves as their advisor, cooks some chili so they're well fed as they work on their canoe. Professor Martha Day, who is co-director of our SkyTeach program, was named as the 2020 recipient of UTeach STEM Educators Outstanding Faculty Teaching Award this year. Our SkyTeach program is a huge gem in WKU's crown. We've prepared over 300 STEM teachers, and it's a terrific example of the partnership across our university, a collaboration between Ogden and the College of Education. Some of you will remember last year at Convocation, we had a young man, Robert Bowden, who spoke to us about his experience in the entrepreneurship program. His company, Spartan Garage, which was a part of our Small Business Accelerator on the Innovation Campus, they are actually expanding their operations in Bowling Green. Currently, they're in the Bowling Green corporate park, but they're building a state-of-the-art facility on Lover's Lane, a true example of what we can do with our applied research. A couple of other good news points about the Innovation Campus. We became a node on the Innovation Network for the state of Kentucky just this past month, important as we are the entrepreneurial and innovation connective tissue between Nashville and Louisville. And we have two new funded through the Small Business Administration, two new Small Business Accelerator advisors helping to continue elevating, which will be important as we recover from this, our local and regional economy. Our National Forensics Association had a Performances of Distinction competition online. One of two schools in the country was WKU to win Performance of Distinction honors in both speech and debate. I want to call out Faith LaPiccolo and Alex Rivera, Faith on the speech side, Alex on the debate side, for their notes. And then Andre Swag, who is a freshman, took the top spot at the National Forensics Association Lincoln Douglas Debate Grand Prix over the summer. We've launched three new healthcare career training programs in Glasgow, Elizabethtown, Russellville. One is in preparing clinical medical assistants. One is preparing pharmacy technicians. And my favorite one, because I get to say this word out loud, preparing phlebotomy technicians. Tom Hunley, who is a professor of English, was awarded the prestigious Rattle Chatbook Prize for his collection of poetry, Adjusting to the Lights. And this is some personal work about raising a teenage son who's on the autism spectrum and his experience of adopting a teenage daughter from state foster care. And I commend those to you. They are personal, emotional, and touching. We received just a couple of weeks ago notice that our Chinese flagship program has been refunded through 2024, a huge accomplishment for our faculty and our university. It's so important because of the language training that they've received and the experience that's created for them. 27 WKU students were recognized by the Gilman International Scholarship Program. We've had 5 students who were awarded Fulbrights or alternates, and we also had 5 Bourne scholarship recipients as a university. Those 5 Bourne scholarship recipients, all members of the Chinese flagship program. And then I'll finish with this. You may have seen the photograph of the beam raising. The WKU Commons project continues. We put in place the final beam on the project. We're about a year away from its completion, a little less than that. But exciting that progress continues on campus. Even though many of us are working virtually, our push toward not just reopening, but our push to continue the great efforts of our faculty and staff, even at a distance, has created just some tremendous successes for us in the past few months. Nice to hear some positive things as we move toward a reopening in just a little bit over 2 weeks. Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. That sure was positive, and I don't think we all take enough time to say to you, thank you. Your adaptive leadership during these unprecedented times has been remarkable, and we appreciate that. I know we all feel that there are so many successes in areas of extraordinary excellence at WKU that we can celebrate. We just need to remember that we got to be good disciples and go out and spread the news. So thank you very much. With that, we'll turn to our committee structure functions. First will be academic affairs. Risha Bell is the chair of that committee and will continue through the next annual fiscal year cycle as chair. Thank you, Dr. Bell, for your services and your leadership on that committee. And now I turn it over to you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, President Trump, for both leading into the academic committee and I've said it before, I do think we're the only university in the state that can claim number one ranking in some academic areas, as you just presented, and it is remarkable, some of those achievements that we've had. Provost Stevens, is there anything you would like to say before we entertain approval of some of our action items? Do you have any comments? Okay. And point of order, we have three action items concerning academic matters. Can we do those as a consensus?
Yes.
Yeah, these were all discussed at the June 26th meeting. We had all committee members present for those discussions. And so action item one was approval of graduate certificate in data analytics. Number two was approval of a graduate certificate program in cybersecurity data analytics. And the third action item was approval of an undergraduate certificate in floodplain management. I would entertain a motion for consensus approval of all three of those.
So moved.
Sorry.
Have a motion from, I believe that was Regent Hoops, and a second from
Harris.
From Webb. Okay. Any discussion, questions about any of those? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion is approved unanimously. Our fourth action item concerns approval of some Emerita appointments. And Provost Stevens, do you have anything further you would like to comment on those?
Yes. Two of them we presented last month, and three additional recommendations came in this month. I'd like to speak briefly about each. The first is Dr. Beverly Segrist. She was a faculty member, started teaching at WKU in the nursing program from 1977 to 1985. And she left WKU for 2 years and worked as a clinical administrator for a home care agency and as a nurse manager for the Barron River District Health Department. She came back to WKU in 1989 as a tenured faculty member. In recognition of her outstanding scholarship, she was named a university distinguished professor and then retired in 2007. She served as a program coordinator for the graduate nursing program 2000 until her retirement. Her service was exemplary and her contributions were great. Dr. Cheryl Davis served WKU for 29 years. She was an outstanding faculty member in the biology department, an excellent role model, and a mentor to many young faculty and students. In 2008, as a testament to her outstanding scholarship in parasitology and related areas, Dr. Davis was named University Distinguished Professor. In addition, she was appointed to serve as Associate Provost for Research and Creative Activity beginning in 2015 and interim dean of graduate school in 2018. She just retired in May. And then finally, Dr. David Neal, professor of mathematics, was in the department for 31 years, during which time he served as a mentor to both faculty and students. In particular, his student focus has resulted in him supervising many, many master's theses, publishing with numerous students who she worked, and most recently served as the advisor. The other two that we talked about last month were Dr. Don Golden from Fort College of Business Management and Dr. V. Vandermeer, professor in physics and astronomy.
Good. Thank you. I've been comment further on Dr. Segrist. As a healthcare professional myself, I've worked with people who she had contact with and helped bring, and her reputation is indeed strong. She's had a very beneficial effect on healthcare services in our region and I'm sure beyond. Klaus, do you have any comments on Dr. Neal?
Dr. Neal came to us from University of Florida, and he was an excellent teacher, very popular, and in particular, he engaged many students in undergraduate research, and he had a great record in for doing that.
Okay. Any other comments or discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion for approval of these emeriti appointments as presented.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Regent Ball and a second, I think, by Regent Hurst. Any further comments or discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes and appointments approved. Mr. Chairman, that is all the business we have of the Academic Committee today.
Thank you, Regent Pale. I want to extend a thank you for your services on the Restart Committee and on the other committees that you've been engaged in with our current pandemic situation. Your services and time are much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Next, we turn to the Executive Committee. We have one action item. It was not presented previously at committee, so this will be our first presentation and discussion. It deals with the approval of philanthropic and honorary naming requests for the Cliff Todd Center. And I think Amanda Trebue is going to present on that subject. Amanda?
Thank you, Chair Hagen. Yes, this morning we seek approval for several philanthropic and honorary naming opportunities at the Cliff Todd Center. First, we'll start with our philanthropic namings. The Mike Simpson Family Board Group and the Pim Isaac Simpson Garden in recognition of gifts from Mike and Pim Simpson. The Harvey Johnston Family Living Room in recognition of a gift from Harvey and Sarah Johnston. The Carol H. Wedge Dining Room in recognition of a gift from Denny and Carol Wedge. The Susan Page and John Dean Minton Jr. Family Room and the Roger M. and Hattie Collins Sullivan Page Garden in recognition of a gift from John and Susan Minton. The Dining Room, in recognition of gifts from various friends and family members of Kira and Harriet Dunn. We also bring forward several honorary meetings, including the Cherry Room, in recognition of Dr. Henry Harden Cherry, the first president of the College Heights Foundation. The Garrett Room, in recognition of Dr. Paul Garrett, president emeritus of the College Heights Foundation. The Thompson Room, in recognition of Dr. Kelly E. Thompson, president emeritus of the College Heights Foundation. The Mary C. Sample Room, in recognition of Mary Sample, former executive secretary of the College Heights Foundation. You can find additional information about each of these individuals in your packet that was presented prior to the meeting. As for budgetary implications, the College Heights Foundation will cover all associated costs for signage in each room and area at the Cliff Todd Center. I'd like to ask Dr. Donald Smith to make a few additional remarks.
Thanks, Amanda. Thank you all for your time this morning. We're very grateful to Cliff Todd for the generosity that was provided for this building that was previously approved by the Regents. This represents another approximately $800,000 in gifts for the Todd Center that we've asked you to approve today. And we look forward to hosting the Regents at some point in the future. I'm sorry the retreat had to be canceled yesterday, but at any point in the future, we should get back to retreat back over here or have social gathering. If we're able to do that, we'd love to meet you.
Amanda, any further discussion from your vantage point?
That is all I have today, sir. Thank you.
I'll entertain a motion and a second, and then we'll call for Regent discussions.
So
your motion for approval.
So moved.
Regent Harris moved.
Second.
Regent Henson seconded. We have a motion and a second, or is there any discussion among the regions or further questions? Hearing none, call the vote. All those in favor of approval, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Passes unanimously. We have an information item. Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Report. Mr. Michael Crowe and Molly Kirby are presenting. So I turn to them.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen because we have a little bit of a presentation. We do have some data and some text, so it might be easier to share the screen and show you our presentation here. Thank you all for letting us come, by the way, to share what we did over the last year. Michael is going to get us started and give you a little bit of idea about what we've been up to for the last year since we were appointed.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, President Tony and the board, and Devin, for inviting us here today. We appreciate your time. I want to start off by introducing myself. I'm Michael Crowe. I'm the director of Students of Conduct and one of the public diversity officers here at WKU. It's important for me to kind of give you an understanding of who I am and introduce myself. I've worked at WKU for over a decade. And at this point, I want to make sure you understand how I've been able to embed this work in this director of Students of Conduct and the values of what I do. Embedding the tenets of the free and what the work is and the important work that we do with all students as well as staff here to ensure that everything we do is fair and up to ethical WKU. So starting out to tie that in, let's look at our mission statement and saying that what we're doing is to empower students, staff, and faculty to embrace diversity in WKU by building an equitable and inclusive learning environment, working and living environment. And so that extends beyond just the classroom. Understanding these efforts, our vision is to essentially provide a holistic educational and employment experience for both our students, faculty, and staff to prepare them to become effective scholars, again, that word scholar, and then the contributor piece to be leaders in a diverse and ever-changing environment. So we want to prepare them to go out and be able to shape and have impact on the world. So looking at how we've gone about constructing the team to take on this work. We have, as far as the construction of our work group, Molly being on the academic side, we constructed this in two main parts. So if you look at the diagram here, you have parts related to academic affairs, representing all the colleges, as well as a student rep that has responsibilities on both sides, ESE, enrollment and student experience, the area that I head up, in terms of the composition there. And then in the middle there, you have some components that we think to be important to tie this all together with our marketing as well as our community, our representation in the way to be, as well as having our faculty and our staff and, represented as well from our community. Next slide. If you look at what we're doing in our structure, we meet monthly, and we have met throughout the pandemic. We've met each month. Throughout, and we have kept the ball moving. So as a work group, we meet and discuss and plan. From there, each unit rep from each college, as well as the subgroup, takes this information back to their work groups within their units and their colleges. And so I want to try to give an opportunity to highlight the unit reps, Pecal, Fabian Alvarez, Christine Cecilia Rivas, College Board, Susan Lugliesman, and the Ogden College Stuart Burris, CHHS is Kimberly Green, ESE is Sarah Hahn. Our staff rep is Jared Smith, SGA is represented by Kyle Phillips, alumni Anthony McAdoo, our local community rep is Ryan Dearbaum, as well as HR, Andrea Sherrill and Josh Hayes, and our faculty student, Julia Stillen, is working to put them in space so we get going and start the semester off. So as you can see, our committee is comprised of three different individuals who take this information that we're working back to embed it into our WKU community. So we're really not structured to keep the work in a silo. We're structured to get this work embedded in every aspect of what we do with WKU. So the unit work members, ESE, HR, et cetera, work members take the governance of information back. And then we take that information, we compile it, and we come back together as a university work group. We work together collaboratively, communicate this information, and move forward in implementing our strategic goals. More information on our committee can be found at our website, diversity.staff, so that information can be gained there. So when we look at the workflow, again, looking at how the PBI reformulated tasks, the indirect impact itself to create the solution and take the ideas back in the think tank. And so from there, the university, you know, units work through those problems at the unit level, craft a concrete project, and then assessment is a big piece that we want to make sure we can do. So every effort that we have, we're looking at how we can assess and analyze the data to ensure that we have a final project that meets the university's DEI or DEI plan. So the work group is a constant evolving group that continually thinks through every single aspect of what it's doing to embed DEI in its work with them. Well, if you look on the side of the data, the quantitative piece we're working on.
Sorry, I was muted. That's one of the hazards of Zoom. I'm Molly Kirby. I've been at WKU for a long time as well. I'm kind of the keeper of the data. Dr. Stevens has appointed me assistant provost for institutional effectiveness, which basically means that I do data, make sure that we're keeping up with accreditation and that sort of thing. One of the things with the Council on Post-Secondary Education is that they sort of have us in this carrot and stick kind of situation, that we have target goals for our recruitment retention and graduation rates for URM and low-income students. If we do not meet our thresholds, they have the ability to not let us post any new programs, which is where we were when Michael and I came in. So our first task was to remediate those things that we had not met from the year before. We did that and got that through about the time we had to write the report for the next year. So one of the things that we're looking at as the DEI work group are these areas that are highlighted. So how this works on the quantitative side of the CAS, the Council on Post-Secondary Education, is that we had a baseline in April year 2015-16. We set that baseline up. Then we go on out into the next few years with our targets coming up a little each year. Now, they give us 2 points for each time we hit our target. They give us 1 point if we hit our target, yet don't go underneath the baseline at 7-15-16. Unfortunately, we get 0 points if we do not hit our target and go under the baseline that we set in 15-16. So this last year, these are the areas where we did fall under. So African-American student enrollment for undergraduates, our six-year graduation rate for low-income students, and our underrepresented management opportunities, in other words, our professional staff and those we have that are underrepresented minorities. So that's kind of how the quantitative side works of the scoring. These are things that are just raw data that come out of there. The thing that we do with the report, though, is a lot of it's based on the narrative and how we write that narrative. What are we doing at WKU? So these criteria that they measure are our opportunities, our impact, and our success. So did we do a good job, or with fidelity did we try to remediate these things? And then we analyze how the strategies were effective, and then the lessons learned, the next steps are all parts of the report we write, which gives us a lot of points. And I will say with pride that we got all the points that we could possibly get on the narrative. And we also scored second in the state under U of L by 1 point. We're scoring the highest on our CPE report this time. So that took a lot of burden off of us for having to worry so much about how the CPE was going to view our data. So what we're looking at these times, and we did this last year, and we're going to use these this time. We don't have to do every one of the strategies outlined in the WKU CEI plan that was approved in 2017. We can pick areas. And I'm one about picking the areas and looking at the data and then doing it one more time so we can see where we've improved. So these are the areas that we looked at in 1920, and they're the areas we're going to look at in 2021. So under opportunity, we're going to look at those, how are we recruiting URM students? We did some multicultural days, waived fees for people to underrepresented minorities and that sort of thing. So we're going to do that again and see if we can keep continuing it. The implementation of a web of recruiting for Invinity Groups, the Alumni Association, led by Anthony McAdoo, has done a great job with these sort of things. We actually have a topper right now, so we're trying to recruit beyond the URM of African American, Hispanic, and low-income students. So we're broadening that net at WKU. We have pre-enrollment education and orientation program started. The community living, LLCs, our living learning communities, have been expanded. We have Stonewall for LGBT. We have Isaac for underrepresented minorities. And then the last part of this is that impact, and that's where we're looking at recruiting faculty and staff, and not just recruiting faculty and staff at our URM, but also trying to keep them here when we get them. So these are all the things that we looked at through the year. You know, how can we do put programs in place to increase that? So we came up with this idea of one WKU, and thanks to President Cavoni, it's viral now. So what does it mean to be one WKU and one family? So this kind of extends a little bit past just diversity, equity, inclusion. But what is the history, sense of belonging, and what does it mean to be part of a family at WKU? So we kind of thought about, you know, what does this look like? And as Michael said at the beginning, the first thing we did was try to look at a mission and a vision. What is it we want at WKU? What do we want our students to do? What do we want our staff and faculty to be? One of the things that we do need to do is a campus climate survey, and I have been looking at one or two. I've seen President Cavoni, and he's got one that he wants me to look at too. So hopefully we can get a nice climate. We need to baseline data again. We need to know where we are so we know where to go. Michael has an affinity for, we don't have any policies. So if you go to WKU and you click on diversity policies for category 10, we have absolutely none. So we have crafted religion policy, one that basically reiterates the federal policy that says that people have a right to take their religious holidays off of work or school within reason to be able to make up those things. Another thing that's really cool is micro-credentialing, and we'll show you at the very end of the presentation something we're very proud of that was created. Michael and I have also been involved in the state cultural competence certificate program planning process that will hopefully be done about the beginning of spring. The state would like to start with leadership and administrators and see what, you know, what things go well. So basically, what would a student or a faculty or staff person from the state of Kentucky who is culturally competent look like at the end of this program? We are going to implement some deliberative dialogues. They're very structured conversations around diversity. That will be starting in the fall. And then we also have initiated this from dialogues to doing. So they're book clubs, but they're basically book clubs that at the end come up with some action plans so that we, you know, go beyond talking about things and actually doing things. Then on the other side of this, you'll see there's the WKU, one WKU Academy. So this is where the micro-credentialing also comes in. All new employees that are coming in, we only have 15, so this is a good year to pilot this. We have 14 faculty and one staff person coming in, so it'll be required of everybody. We'll go through bias training, so there's intercultural communication, allyship, that kind of thing. Hopefully we can do faculty staff together for the first part of this, and then we'll break out in the spring into different things that would affect your job. So with faculty, you would talk about pedagogy, curriculum, staff, we'll talk about employee relationships and those sort of things. Hopefully that we can get everyone on campus on board with all these things by the next fall. So this fall would kind of be like making sure we have these things together and in place, so that we're ready to go. And this is our micro-credentialing badge. So anyone who goes through the 1WKU Academy will have this. My dream is to be able to have where you are on your website, the design, you would have your little credentialing. The Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning also has some of these, so it's sort of like a little trophy case of things that I've accomplished through what I've done. Michael, do you have anything else you'd like to add to the presentation before we open it up for any questions?
I'll hold to the end. Thank you.
Okay, that's about all we have, but that's kind of what we've been up to for the last year. We've been working really hard on some of this stuff. I think the biggest shift that we've had is that The DEI is a work group on campus rather than an advisory group to a couple of people that do. So our main goal for this is to make sure that everybody is doing work on DEI on our campus. So if y'all have any questions for us, we'd be glad to answer.
Thank you, Dr. Kirby and Mr. Crow. Any regents have questions or comments?
I have one thing that I'm wondering about as you give this presentation. Obviously, y'all have done a lot of work. It sounds fun and exciting. How does the effort with the Networks Intercultural Student Center play with this? Is that a tool that you use or...
Yeah, I would say that most of the data that we do have is collected from there. We were really close with them. As a matter of fact, some of the things that we've come up with too, like micro-credentialing in terms of book clubs and stuff, Martin Sales is helping with that. Also, the ISTIC Living Learning Community is a part of the Living Learning Community that I was speaking about. And actually, the Pride Center falls under there too, so they are really an intricate part. Another thing that was interesting to me as I was going through this data is the role that TRIO plays. So you're talking about now pieces of puzzles just really coming together. When you have TRIO and you have Dr. Sales working with both of those things, and that's probably the crux of our work. I think that we've got a lot of good things going on with that. Michael, do you have anything to add since you work closely with them?
I think that echoes it perfectly. I think just making sure that everything that we do can finally to what efforts they're doing, supporting those in any way that you can. And so I think that it's important to know that is an area that you want to mature as a continued success and support from our DEI work.
Well, as a board member, I certainly appreciate what George and his wife have done, and I'd like to know that that's fitting in nicely with what you all are
doing. Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions. Phil, thank you very much for that. I'm grateful. We're excited and proud of the work that the team is doing there. It's really them. We want to be supportive and they tell us that we can be helpful, and we're glad to do that. I just have a couple of things. One thing I do want to add related to what Bill just shared. We've been talking to Martha this summer, and she had wanted to start a Black Male Initiative, which is around leadership for Black males, and we agreed to fund that, and we'll be able to help about 30 Black male students coming in. And the thing that I'm really excited about is not only is this a male initiative for leadership, but there is a component that actually talks about their relationship with women and the role that they should play in that. So we're really excited about that. That'll be another component about in terms of what's been going on there. Regarding the presentation, which I appreciate you all doing and I commend you for the work, I have one question and on the presentation, and then I have another question on the larger issue and then a comment. So first on the question, on the data that you showed about what we report to the state, and just for those highlighted areas, are you all looking at why we were, given the number was higher in 2016, which I guess is a benchmark, and then we went down, we looked at what was going on then, that we were so high, and what's happened for the number that's great for now. But then when I looked at some of the percentages in terms of your targets, not knowing the raw numbers, I don't know if enough, the percentage may look like really high, and is that ambitious? So I couldn't connect all that, so if you can help me with that, I appreciate it.
Okay, yeah, the percentages that you see, like for 2021, those are set by the state, so those are things that we have, but you're right, it's not a huge number of students, right? And I think if you look at our overall enrollment from 2015-16 to now, we lost a significant amount of students.
Do we know why?
That's a very complex question.
Molly, can I take a crack?
Yes, sir. Dr. Stevens may. I mean, there really are a lot of reasons. Could you go ahead?
So, George, I think you have to contextualize it in an overall enrollment decline trend. So it's not just the students of color. It was an overall first-year trend that was declining. But you all remember we made a policy shift fall of 18 that said we're going to focus on not just access, but access with success. Because what you were seeing in terms of overall enrollment numbers was a first-year enrollment number that certainly was much larger, but those students didn't retain. And so we made the challenging decision to say, look, if you have below this threshold, we're going to ask you to begin at a community college and transfer in your junior year, number one. But the other part that goes hand in glove with that, and I'm really excited, remember these are lagging indicators, is I think Ethan likely will touch on some portion of this in his presentation. When you look at the shift we've made in and the additional funding available to the Cornelius Martin Scholarship coupled with the decision to reward 4 years of work instead of just performance on the ACT, a reduction in the, at least a moving down of the need curve to help more needy students have access to this. I think what you're going to see is more 3.0 and above students, fewer 2.5 and 2.0 students. And so while the freshman enrollment might be down, what we see this year is our sophomore number, and the same thing was true last year, our sophomore number will be just as large as that sophomore number used to be. So what we're doing is focusing in on those students who have the highest likelihood of persisting and trying to move the recruitment of more of those students. But, you know, as Molly and Michael said, this is a puzzle, right? So we're overlaying multiple strategies. George, your investment is part of that. James Graham Brown and their investment is part of that. The possibility of working with some national organizations to kind of continue the effort and deepen it, I think, is what we're looking toward. And while I'm pleased that we were just behind Louisville, we don't ever want to be second to anybody.
Do we know what happens with the incoming freshman class in terms of underrepresented minorities? What is the percentage there?
Class, are you talking about for this year?
Yes.
Ethan probably has those numbers.
Yeah. I did look it up, and we're up from last year. Somewhere around 130-something students. Is that right, Ethan? For URM?
I'll show the slide on that in just a moment.
Okay, cool. All right.
That would be helpful to see that. So I was really curious about just, I know the discussion we had, and I know that when I talked to Tony before, I fully support that the student's not ready. Let's not turn them away and say, we'll figure it out on their own, and how do we help them, whether it's a community college or something else, and then ultimately trying to get them out. So I thought I understood it. Just wanted to make sure I understood it. Because, you know, when you look at the numbers, just looking at them and not understand what's behind them, you get confused, and then it's part of what's really talking about where success is and then what our challenges are. That's the first question. The second is, and maybe it was not intended for this discussion, but I think the board would, at some point, you see value in understanding what is the strategy when the students show up on campus, given the national unrest that's going on in the country, and especially in Louisville. Because Bowling Green is a different community, and Louisville and Lexington, but we're, and where I don't, wouldn't think that there's a lot of protest or activism happening in town, being Bowling Green. But the fact that it's happening in Louisville, it's happening in Lexington, it's happening in other communities, those young folks are going to come to campus. And they're going to have those perspectives of going to campus. Right, we need to think about what is our focus, our strategy, our plan for helping them express themselves in the program, but also manage how that will play itself out on campus and how it plays itself out from a campus perspective and the community itself. And that's why I didn't hear that. As we're dealing with COVID-19 and all the issues surrounding that, I don't think this national unrest and protest is going to be actually accelerated. One, there will be the line between the federal military and the time that's not. And then we're going to have to deal with, one, if there's additional things that happen, and there are. The situation in Denver where you have four kids in a car that are attacked at gunpoint by police and don't get on the ground and run situated. Those things are going to happen and they're going to have to deal with them. And then we've got to deal with the fact that nothing's happened from a legal perspective. All those things are going to come back. And I really think we need a strategy to know how we're going to manage that. Both on campus with community leaders, because I just, you know, it's coming, you know, it's there. And, I watch a lot of the universities here coming up in the area. You know, they're thinking about it as well because of so much of the protests that we've done down further. So I just think the second we need to think about it, when it becomes a microcosm on campus versus the fact that we not necessarily get the community, but it could very easily spill over to the community. And then that is separate from that.
George, we've had a lot of conversation about that. Michael, do you want to talk about the plan, the goals for that, working with the WKU Police Department, that sort of thing we talked about?
Absolutely. Thank you. Ms. Middle, that's a great point, a great concern to have. Part of the conversations we've been having surrounding this, including conversations around zoning, is that we want to allow our students to be delighted to demonstrate, to come and to express themselves and organize in a managed time, place, and manner way of doing so. So by doing one of those things, by doing that, I also think that you were missed by didn't mention Dr. Collins and her efforts supporting and being there for students. Is being on the front side of student leadership and helping them plan and organize what they choose would like to do from the standpoint of how to. And so using our time, place, and manner policy to help guide them through what they would like to do is one of the main starts that we have to serve the students to do it correctly. One of the things too to speak to is I've been meeting with a group of African American and men of color at the WKU faculty and staff. I just took the initiative on my own, place in my heart, on how I was feeling at the time of George Floyd's murder, to reach out to my colleagues at WKU and say, hey, look, I'm hurting. I need to create this space in which you will join me. And so the initial outreach was with about 45 faculty and staff, and we met. About 12 of us got together on Zoom. We've been meeting for the last 10 weeks. We'll be coming up our fifth meeting next Wednesday. And within that, we took these tenets that, these strategies that Dr. Cavone outlined, and we targeted the ones we would like to help put our efforts behind. Mr. Lamar O'Moore is also part of the group that you mentioned, the mentorship program. We are ready to support that program 100%. We are waiting to hear from him what we need to do and where we need to be. One of the other things is Chief Walker is on the call, and Officer Gray is on the call as well. He is working to facilitate strengthening the partnership. That is one of the aspects of what we want to do with our strategy. So we have set up a program that will be virtual, however we work when we are at the time, to speak to our students, to have our local law enforcement speak to our students, be a part of a deliberative dialogue with our students to let them express themselves and say what they feel so that our law enforcement hears what they're experiencing, what they're paying, what their fears are, so they are prepared to help partnership with them. And so I think that, you know, making sure that we are in advance of this, we create a platform for our students to come in and to express themselves however they wish to do it, but not suppress that. So I think the thought process has been there, the planning has been there, the individuals who want to be a part of the work are ready. And so it's just a matter of when they return, what can we support them. So I truly, I appreciate you bringing that up because, again, that is my understanding. You know, coming from the role that I play here at the WKU, being strategic and planning and being prepared for our students to help them, to be there for them, to make sure that we understand what they want to express and how to help them manage that. And so it also would be something not to, to mention, to forget to mention, but our partnership with our local NAACP. Well, having Mr. Ryan Dearborn be a part of our committee, his appointment was probably within the last month. That is a connection, a connection that needs to be had. So what we're doing there, he's taking back. We're strategizing with our local innovation team to ensure that what we're doing makes sense to the Walgreens community. That it is something that we will be doing that makes an impact beyond the WKD4 walls. So I think that that's one of the conversations that we want to make sure that we're having to be a part of more than just what WKD4 is. Just to kind of articulate, brainstorm some thoughts and things we've been doing, from my perspective as well as from the committee's perspective, it's an insight for us.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad to hear that you thought about it, that making the connections, and that the police department is involved in that. I'm not aware of challenges or difficulties that we have with law enforcement and our students, and that's a good thing. But also just trying to make sure that there's a recognition of the sensitivity that our young people are going through. I am not a supporter of defunding the police. CJ and I actually did a scholarship program for women at the University of Louisville for the Police Academy. So we really believe in the role that it plays in the importance of that as a community. And I really think law enforcement can play a very integral role in helping us get through this and helping our students understand and recognize the importance of both that law enforcement plays, but also giving them the work that they need. So I'm just glad to be bringing all that together as important. And making sure that, there's law enforcement, there's things to do, and then there's common sense. And hoping that and believing in our security that protects our students, all of our students. I'm thinking about that as they go through recognizing these young people are still learning and want to learn. I'm glad to hear that. I'd love to continue to give updates on where that is. I just know that this is going to be an issue that we're probably dealing with for several months, especially recognizing that we've got a case in Minneapolis that probably got another trial sometime next year. That's why I say that's a good plan.
Mike, is the invitation to be the next one there? Yeah.
Thank you. The nice thing that I wanted to just make a comment about is, and Dr. Mooney and I talked about it, we really need to think about, as a university, how we promote what we're doing. We actually have some good things going on, but I don't know that we're, telling enough people about the good things we have going on. And we really need to figure out how to do that. And it's, I think of it from the broader university community that we want to promote the progress that we're making, the training on and growing our students and students of color and these initiatives that are addressing the national unrest. Because I think that where Louisville and Kentucky, they get the media coverage about what they're doing, there's a lot happening in Western too. And it's not being covered in the journal or on the rest of the world, so people are like, well, nothing's happening. Western's not there, and that's really not true. The other thing is, I know that Dr. Mooney is a consistent to me as some of the older, more senior black alumni who are not necessarily, and this is not criticism, are not necessarily connected to the current alumni association that is probably a younger group. And so they're not, and I don't know the answer, I don't know how to tell them the situation, but when they reached out to me and I talked about some of the things going on and Dr. Bowen talked in, they were like shocked. Well, we didn't know all of that. And we just probably ought to try to think about telling us the story, the great story that's going on in the Western. And again, I'm not trying to be the marketing person or the press person, but just really thinking about promoting the progress that we're making. When we talked about, our retention, that's pretty powerful. And I know that we have felt the claim when we go back to that, so I know that, but we still have to think about how to tell the great story and the work that you all are doing on what's going on with that. So I love all of what's going on with the broader community and also news about what's going on.
Yeah,
well, that's one of the reasons. With that, and as you're talking about that, I'm thinking believe we just heard that we have the national champion in the Lincoln Douglas debate. And I'm always just blown away when I ever hear any of our forensic students. I can't imagine at the ages they are standing up before audiences and doing what they do. So we have a Rolls Royce parked in the garage, and our students in the forensics department need to go out and tell that story. As well as pay the bills. We need to give that some thought.
George, is that we, if you notice in the middle, we added marketing and the NAACP for the community in there. And then Michael and I are also sending out monthly emails. But I think that if people don't, if you pay an email, get, you know, people want stories from them. If they're not going to ask us, we need to give it to them. So that's one of the things that we've been talking about. It's like, let's give it to them. We have an LLC for Citizenship and Social Justice this time. What are we going to do with that? And we need to get it out there, get that information. You know, so if people aren't going to ask us, we just need to give it to them.
And I know that Dr. Caboni's conversation with Levin, who I talked to, is, you know, okay, how would you like us? And so I think we should be asking that question. But there's just a lot of great stuff going on. And I want us to promote it. And as we continue to develop what we're doing, it is a good story.
George, one of the things that came out of that conversation, so that there's this more senior group of alumni that I had just a terrific conversation with the representative of that group. The comment that resonated with me was, I don't want to see some slick PR piece come sit down with us. And so while I think we've done a good job through the formal marketing channels and thinking about how you communicate that way, I think that what we've got to do a better job of is getting out and among a community that doesn't feel like they've gotten that kind of attention. And so I think one part of that is talking about in a formal way what we do, but it's more important to have relationships. And while they were very interested in homecoming, not interested in coming back to doing what the Alumni Association homecoming is, but really, can we have a state of Black students and Black life on campus, and would you provide that for us? And the answer is absolutely. Even more importantly is get in the car, drive up, go to their meetings in the church, and then go out for dinner with them or lunch with them after their gathering. And so I think we have a group of influential, powerful folks that aren't plugged into the formal architecture of the institution. And so we either have to figure out how to create that for them, or more importantly, just make sure that we're integrated with them.
And one other thing, I know Todd's on the questions on the call team, is, you know, in terms of Michael, what you and Molly discussed, I think it's going to be really important that the athletic program is connected to that, because honestly, that's actually the bigger platform that we have. And I, you know, when I'm watching what's going on with the NBA, the WNBA, and all that, I'm quite sure that I'm going to have to deal with we have those issues on the sports teams, and we just really, pulling all this together is going to be really important in trouble, how we manage it, and giving them an opportunity to have a voice, but also recognizing as a representation of what's going to be personal. So, maybe the next time we can connect it to you, hear a little bit about what's going on, but I think probably as well. But I just know that's going to be another big issue in terms of how and the players may want to represent themselves in terms of being demanded. Thank you.
Any more questions or discussions? This has been a great discussion, a meaningful discussion, and lots of ideas and possibilities. Any wrap up, Dr. Kirby or Mr. Crow?
Yes, I want to take the opportunity to, again, challenge the leadership. You know, it comes from the top down. You know, everybody, down on the voice and, you know, on the screen, you know, it's to allow your thoughts to include diversity, equity, inclusion in everything that you do. To make sure that you understand that WKU has to do this collectively. You know, the one WKU is not a campaign, it's not a slick ad. It is what we want to do, it is the direction that we want to take WKU. It's a cultural shift, it's a shift for all of us. We all need to be vulnerable and okay with understanding that we may not be comfortable with this, may not be as well versed in this as we should be, or think we should, or others think we should be. But be okay with that. Have your thought process. Think about how you can develop this culture, make the change where this is an inclusive place that students want to come to. I think that it's one that we want to make sure we continue to make the EKU a place that we're all proud of, and that this work is just not like with Molly and work with this. We all need to get part of the police and buy in and try to do our best to meet these goals collectively at one to EKU, and first making sure that it meets our strategic plan and that the EKU is in the news by what we're doing. And again, I'm challenging everyone to be charged with us. So that's really where I want to leave this, and I do want to make sure that you guys know Molly and I, we're not just, you know, talking the talk. We are walkers. We're walking the walk. We want this to be what WKU is and what it stands for. Be on our time. You all and at WKU. Thank you all for your time today.
Thank you. Anyone else? That will conclude the items that we had on the exec committee portion. We now turn to finance and budget. Vice Chair Kenny, are you ready to take over? And I appreciate you. I think this is your third term of duty, or fourth.
Thanks, sir.
So through that, he has dealt with our transition to a new budget format, our transition in the accounting side. He's dealt with budget deficits, and we're thankful for his talents, time, and service. Jason, if you would do the finance and budget.
All right. We have one item on our agenda that was presented at the committee. Is that we want approval of personnel actions? Do I have a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
All right, George, thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Linda. Does anybody have any questions or comments about the personnel actions? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion carries. And that is it for our action items. We do have information item, Susan and Rebecca Russell, concerning our excellent budget management program. Go ahead, Susan.
And so, Anthony is bringing up our... Thank you. So as Regent McKinney said, I have with me today Rebecca Russell. As a reminder, she's our interim AVP for budget and financial planning. And she has basically chaired the implementation work around the Axiom software for the campus. So she's intimately involved in the detail and very knowledgeable. She will walk the board through a system demonstration. I've got a few opening comments. Becca, jump in, anything I'm missing. So next slide, please. So what we're going to cover today is basically what is Axiom. We've been talking about this budgeting software now. I probably started talking about it in the fall. So just a little on that. Becca will go live. Hopefully we don't have any system issues. Becca will go live into the system, and she can show you what the system currently looks like. We'll go over the modules that we actually have active right now, future models, and next steps. So next slide. Next slide.
Give me a minute, it's locked up.
Of course it is.
There's no need for that.
Susan, before we get to the slides, if I may, some of you may be questioning why in the world are you showing us budget software at a Regents meeting. This is less about the software and more about the strategic shift in thinking that we're continuing to evolve from the new budget model. And so this will enable both a deepening of that capacity across the institution, but also really provide powerful tools for our leadership to think differently about the way in which they manage their budgets. So it's not necessarily about the software, it's about the thinking that this is enabling for the university.
Yeah, and so thank you, President Cuomo, for saying that, because I think I said it back in the fall, and I still say it today. I may be a budget geek, but this software will actually bring the RAND model to life with the deans and the vice presidents and the budget managers across campus. So quickly, basically, what does this bring to campus? Well, first off, it streamlines WKU's budget creation. It allows for more flexible day-to-day tracking of your budget status. Springly modernizes campus reporting capabilities. And the final bullet I'm really excited about. It will support something I talked about when I first came. It will support long-term scenario building and financial planning for the university. So you'll see that this is just a screenshot over to the right side of the bullet points. One of the kind of the canned reporting out of Axiom, it basically compares operating margin over the past few years of forecasting out and how that compares to Moody's A2 benchmarks. So this is just a flavor for some of the capabilities that the software brings to campus. So next slide. So this is your current on-demand canned budget report out of Banner, which has been used across campus for years and years and years. It's basically just a standard report. You'll see you've got budgets, you've got adjusted, you've got your revised budget, you have actuals. So anyway, I've heard loud and clear since coming to our campus that everybody is wanting greater flexibility in reporting. So I think the next slide, next slide, please. So this will give you, this is a dashboard out of Axiom. And this is an executive summary, so something that the President, Provost, and I will look at. And you'll see the different types of reporting that the software offers. So I'm going to turn it over to Becca now, and she's going to actually go live into the system so you can see some of what this brings to campus. So, Becca.
All right, good morning. Hopefully you all are going to be able to see my screen there. Maybe it's bundling or nausea, so can you see that all right? Good. All right, so good morning. As Susan said, what you have here on my screen is what we call the Executive Summary Dashboard. This is the snapshot that you see when you first log into the system. This is going to be gated by security role. So as the AVP for budget, my snapshot shows me all continuous campus status. But if I'm a college budget manager or I'm a dean, I'm going to see things specific to my college or specific to my unit. So we have some really high-level snapshot key metrics here. So we see where we are on our budget versus actuals on revenues, personnel expenses, and direct expenditures. These all update daily with our banner roles, so these fall within 24 hours of any changes that happen inside of Banner system. I do want to just clarify for them that this is the demo system, and we are still live working on the system every single day. We are working to roll to FY22 development, so some of the things you see are placeholders and some of the data is changing in the background to prepare for that role. So this is really just to show you what the system is capable of, but some of the data is placeholders, so just keep that in mind as we go through. But again, so
can I add one clarification so everyone understands? Banner is still our official financial record.
Yes.
It's the general ledger. This is a bolt-on that takes the data, the financial data, out of the general ledger and moves it over to this software.
Yes, excellent. Thank you, Susan. I like to say that Banner is our single source of truth for WKU. It is where the data is housed. It is where we're going to be pulling the data from. Axiom really just sits on top of that, and it's a tool to allow our budget managers, our teams, our VPs to really rethink how they're doing their budgets and tracking those and looking at them more closely and giving them the tools to to learn the ins and outs of how things work in a way that they never really were able to before. So, again, Banner is that single source of truth, it's RDL, and Axiom is just really reflecting that, that data in a very different way than we're used to. So the left-hand side will show budget versus actuals with a dollar per cent out over or under. And again, this will show specific security unit and log into the system. So this is something that, you know, can be exported and shared with senior leadership. As Susan said, this is something that she and the provost and the president would definitely be able to see. It makes sense at a quick, high level of how things are looking across the university. And then I want to share with you guys the budget module. So this is really where the rubber meets the road, if you will. This is where all of our indexes are going to be accessed. So again, these are security-based, just like our dashboards are. So if I'm the budget manager for enrollment experience, for example, I will see all the indexes associated with my area. If I'm the budget manager for Auburn College, I will see Auburn College indexes here. And it will show me kind of in a quick place how to get to all of those indexes. One of the things I really love about this screen is that Susan mentioned we are going to be using Access to help us in the budget creation process. And at any point at any time while we were doing that sequence, I will be able to log into Axiom to see where the budget process sits. So hopefully you all can see me kind of moving my mouse around here. These different steps that you see will actually track where we are through the budget creation process. So if I made a budget request or I've asked a question or if I've moved my files on to the next stage, I will be able to see where they are and what process step they are in. This also has a wonderful place where we can make announcements to campus and communicate with them. And then again, process summary will help us through that budget process. So this is again just a dashboard and it is a jumping off place. So you will see the indexes here, but then once you open an index, you have a much more drill down. And as Susan showed you all, the Banner Finance Report is really great for high-level data. It's going to give you totals. It's going to give you budget versus actuals. But you have to go to different reports or go to different areas within Banner systems to get to account-level information, for example, or get to detail-level. Within Axiom, you can do that in one place, which is really revolutionary for campus. Gone are the days where we're going to have to run multiple reports to get all the data to one location. We'll be able to see all that within Axiom itself. So all of these menu or options are drop-down. So you can open these up to see the accounts associated with those expenses, and they will show you all of those totals and what those specific account lines are. You will also have the ability to run budget versus actual reports that are more detailed than we've really have ever had an opportunity to do. And these, again, give you that snapshot of your current budget versus your prior year. And these actually can be drilled down to account level. So if I'm looking at my equipment lines here, I can see that we've had some transactions go by in July on this line. If I click my magnifying glass here, I will actually see GL-level account data within the system. This is really awesome for our management team and for budget managers because we used to have to go into multiple reports and multiple places to get this information. So having it in one location and having it streamlined and having all this data in one place for people to see is going to be really helpful for our team. And so that's sort of the budget level in a nutshell. The reporting that we're going to have is going to be created out of the budget module. Actual financial statements, all kinds of great things. Those are still currently in development, so I can't share anything beyond the budget and that versus actuals with you guys today. But I'm excited to see how those come together in the coming weeks. The next module I want to share with you guys is our tuition planning module. And beyond our long-term planning and scenario planning, this is one of my favorite tools within Axiom. What this does is it actually brings all of our tuition planning and projecting buckets all into one place. And so, you know, Susan and I talk about this a lot. The tuition projection process for campus involves a lot of people. We have a lot of voices at the table, a lot of people who have to come and be a part of that conversation. And in prior years, the data associated with projecting tuition comes from many different things. And Axiom is going to allow us to combine those into one location. So if we are going to get ready to project tuition revenue in the coming year, we can go into the Axiom tuition planning tool and we can see our various buckets of tuition all in one location. So this is categorized by our major categories. So we have our undergraduate, have a graduate. And then we have another section which really houses a lot of our dealer programs, on-demand, online programs, anything that really assesses tuition in a unique way, shows in the other tab. And the really, really awesome thing about this tool is that all of these drop-down boxes here allow adjustment. So if we are getting ready to plan enrollment and we are looking at tuition revenue for coming year, we can actually go into these boxes. Hopefully you guys can see them. They're a little bit lighter blue. And make adjustments to what we anticipate our enrollment is going to be across each of our classes. And the tool within Axiom will actually project out changes to enrollment and show us what that's going to do for the financials of the university. And as you can see, we can make plans for several years in advance. So we aren't just talking about next year. We're talking about the year after that and the year after that. And the impacts to WKU's bottom line can be projected out for multiple years in one location. The other thing that I really do like about this tool set is that as we think about our strategies for financial aid and scholarships for our students, we can actually go in and project out and make adjustments to financial aid expectations to see how that impacts our total revenue for campus. And all the changes that you make here in these screens, whether that's under on undergraduate, graduate, or other, come together on a summary tab. And this summary tab will show you full expected and projected enrollments. They will project out then a gross tuition number based on those enrollment projections. You can project out any mandatory fees that are associated with those students. And then again, those financial aid expectations can be put into the system to give us an overall net tuition revenue expectation, not only for the coming year, but several years down the road.
So Becca, let me add something on this module. So this will be critical, particularly, I mean, not just from a central perspective, but for our deans. When you move into an RCM grant model, for the first time, the deans are going to be responsible for tuition planning and the responsibility for that. So this will allow a dean to drill down all the way down to program, or department to program level, and do scenario planning. For instance, if they want 4 sections of this course and 5 sections of this course, and if this section fills up, we move to another section. So a lot of great capabilities for our deans as they learn to manage their revenue budget.
Absolutely. The tuition planning module, Susan and I like to talk about, I'm a little bit of budget geek. So the tuition planning tool is really awesome from my perspective because it takes the process that we just did this past year in multiple spreadsheets and pivot tables and all kinds of different data sources and puts it into one location and one source where we can make those changes and projections, the ultimate impact on the bottom line. So the idea that we can do that in one place rather than multiple is I hope it's exciting for campus as it is for me. And so this is our tuition planning module. And I'm going to show you guys our last current active module, and that is our grant module. And so when you open up this module, this is just a quick, again, high-level dashboard and executive summary type thing that just kind of shows some of our big high metrics in the grant model, so things like FTE and headcount, student credit hours, things of that nature. Now, this data, I showed you all before, the summary dashboard, that data updates every 24 hours. This information will update yearly when we pull our census data in from institutional research. So we'll work with them around census time to update this information around the same time as we start that process for the next upcoming budget year. But again, just a really visual way to see those metrics that are really important to the grant model. And then from here, you can actually go into the allocation module itself. And as we like to say, this replaces our Huron spreadsheet that we all know and love over the last few years. Instead of having this very large Excel spreadsheet, instead all the allocation metrics will take place in the background of Axiom. Now, in a lot of our other modules that I've shown you all, we can change or edit it. You can actually go in and input data to make scenario planning or to go and think a little bit differently about what your tuition or your expenditures are going to look like. The grant module is really made to be the original and to influence your creation and your budget making process. This is not something that is edible. So the metrics here are for information to show you all how revenue and how expenditures are moving through the model, but you cannot go change the metrics. Those metrics are something that so to not cause confusion across campus or cause issues with expectations. So those are locked in, and they are only going to be changed by a single administrator if campus decides that those metrics need to be changed for change. So again, this is for display. But again, because this is a lot of information and you all are familiar with that spreadsheet, that it is very large, there's a lot of information in it, we do have the ability through a rank report to filter this information down. So if I'm just curious to see, for example, one of the academic units, I can run a filter, and apply that filter, and it will pare down the spreadsheet for me and show me just for College of Business. And you can do this for any unit, whether it's primary or secondary support, to kind of take that information and bring it down a little bit better for you to see it. So we need to say that the deans will use that this report quite frequently to see their picture of the RAMP model and vision to that larger metric sheet to see where they compare to the entire university. And because the RAMP model is so important and so critical to campus, this is not security locked down. So it doesn't matter if I am the budget manager for Ogden or if I'm central support unit budget manager, I can see the entire model. And we think that's vital to campus, not only for understanding of the model, but showing what the budget looks like. So this is something that you can see all the information for instead of having that influenced by your security vote.
Rebecca, I have a question on that one. It also would be possible for a dean to say, let me look at those budget model allocations over multiple years so they can see what the strategic decision they've made for a college and how does that influence how those trends go over time?
Yes, absolutely. You can definitely see information for multiple years. I'm just showing this year because that's all we have currently coded as we continue to work through the process of creating our information within the system, but you will be able to access multiple years. Okay. Susan, was there anything you want to add on the general model?
No, I think that's all unless you want to ask. I'm just going to finish up quickly, Jason, with just a few. If you can bring that slide deck back up. If not, we're okay to...
I can talk to you the next step with you.
Yeah, okay, so...
Can I ask a couple of questions before you move on?
Sure.
So the first question I have, you talked about a tuition planning model for deans. And so for a dean to actually use that, they need to take into account whatever the various fees which have to be paid under the RAMP model. Is that something they see in this tuition planning model?
So the tuition planning module will just look at, the tuition module will simply look at just tuition and mentor student fee files. So the information on how that goes out through the RAMP model will be in the RAMP model itself, inside of those metrics that I showed you guys. They don't pair together across the software. So the tuition planning is strictly looking at that high level number of what would then go through the RAMP allocation model process to be pushed out to the colleges. So if they were wanting to look at, you know, that tuition revenue and their expenditures, they have to put those together. But that is something that we definitely look at making the report for, to pull that information together in one place.
Yeah, I mean, that's what a dean would have to see, whether that's worthwhile for them to invest in or not.
Yes, ma'am.
It is actually on that report. So if you would scroll down, you could see what all those things and expenditures are.
And I was just getting ready to say that, Brother Stevens. Thank you. The rate report cost does show everything in that model. So it's going to show the revenue, it will show the direct expenditures, it will show the expenditures for the support units and an overall total and margin at the bottom. So it's all together in that module. It's just sort of kind of at the bottom of the screen there. So it is all there together.
Okay. Thanks. And then the second question is the spreadsheets you currently have posted on our RAMP model website. So for a normal faculty staff person, what can they see?
Okay. module inside of Axiom can still be exported, so we are more than happy to continue to post those for folks who may not have Axiom access. Because I will say we do have a limited number of licenses to the software, so it will be for our deans and our budget managers and senior administrators. But we are happy to continue to export this and post it on the website.
So the active module, again, I won't, Jason, I won't take much longer. So as Becca said, we've got several active modules. One is the budget model. Module, and that basically is to monitor budget versus actuals and daily revenue and expense details. The primary unit training began in mid-July on that module. So next slide. So tuition planning is another one that Becca went over, and the primary unit training will begin in early August. Becca, did you say that's actually scheduled for next week, I believe?
Yes, ma'am. I'm starting training with our deans and budget managers on the next set of modules next Wednesday.
Okay, great. Next slide. And the allocation module that Becca wrapped up with, that's where all the grant, the RCM allocation metrics are housed. And as she said, this replaces that huge Huron spreadsheet that was just terrible to manage. So primary unit training on that will begin in mid-August. So next slide. So the future models. Labor forecasting and tracking. So here at WKU, we did not have any type of position management system. And the problem with that, you could ask Becca, what do black salaries look like? And she'd give you one answer. You'd go to human resources and ask for black salaries. They'd give you another answer. And more than likely, you'd go to deans and vice presidents, and they would give you a third answer. So this module will allow us to have one source of truth. And it basically, we can track and plan personnel expenditures down to the position level. So next slide. So again, you'll see the future ones. We don't have any. Becca has not started working on the forecasting module at this point, so we didn't have any screenshots for that. But all of these future modules, the labor tracking, the forecasting, and the budget request module, and that's the one where we'll actually do the budget creation. All of those will be developing during September with an anticipated launch to Canvas in October. So next slide. So basically the next steps are two. One is continue module implementation. That will lead that to the Canvas. And believe it or not, this is hard to believe since we just approved the budget a month or so ago. We'll begin initial budget development activities for fiscal year 22 here this month. So that's all we have. I'm certainly ready to take any questions or comments. That's it, Jason.
All right. Tell you what, I'm really excited about that software. It's less reporting, less plan tool. Excited to see the budget reports that we'll be able to have it out of the existing way. And access to information is definitely going to be critical to the brand success. Really excited to see that. That being said, Sue, did you want to mention to Christy?
Yeah, so, I'm going to introduce Christy Smith. She's our interim CFO. She took over that area when Jim Cummings retired. I guess it was in December. Christy, it seems like yesterday, doesn't it? And so she's done a great job in that role. And so what we've asked Christy to do is to basically oversee the internal audit function on campus. So she will be taking over that, so that we make sure that we have someone in place so that campus knows that we do have an internal audit function up and running. And so, Christy, do you want to tell the board a little bit about yourself and your vision of this role and the interim capacity as far as audit?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. Just to give you some background, I graduated from WKU and went to work for Holland CPA in 1998. And Holland CPA is now called Raven Ingram. I worked there for 16 years and practically
every portion of the public accounting arena. Moved to WKU and Outland 14 as payroll manager, and back in December into the interim CFO role, and looking forward to broadening that into internal audit. As we move forward with internal audit, I want to make sure that everyone is aware that the internal audit website is live and running. So if anyone has anything to report, go to the website and make a confidential report directly to me. We just look into it and investigate. There's also an option for anonymous reporting. We can make a report and we be assigned a case number. So no names would ever be exchanged. We would communicate by that case number and work through whatever was reported, however it turned out.
So I just wanted to say, Christy, thank you for that. I really do appreciate Christy's willingness to step up to the plate and take on this additional role. She has lots of hats she's wearing these days, and so she loves WKU, and she's willing to help in this interim capacity. So,
yeah, thank you, Susan.
All right. That's all I have for the
Thank you, Jason. Our next section, student affairs. Regent Henson will continue to serve as chair of that committee. This is your fourth tour duty, or fifth?
I think I need
third. So we're seasoned at all committee positions. Regent Henson is definitely the spirit of WKU, and we appreciate her and what she brings to the resources for student affairs. Regent Henson.
Thank you, Chair Higdon. Ethan, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Regent Henson. Thank you.
I just wanted to get to introduce you. Ethan and I talked about it a little bit yesterday, and he thought that everything that you could possibly say about him had been said. But as I was reading the summary he wrote me, the last three sentences made me laugh. He said he was very excited to be in Bowling Green. It is a lovely community, but he can hardly wait till it gets reopened. And he's looking forward to an experience in Kentucky. And as a young woman that was born and raised in Kentucky, I'm really looking forward to you experiencing my home state as well. With that, I'd like to welcome you to your board meeting. I think this is your second one, virtually?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir, and I'm going to go ahead and let you do your presentation on an enrollment update, and also a test optional component. And I'm really excited about the enrollment update. I've read the information last night. It's pretty impressive.
Thank you, Regent Henson. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and assembled regents. I appreciate this opportunity to talk to you briefly about enrollment and student experience. There's a PowerPoint presentation, I think, that's coming online. There it is. To kind of go hand in hand with this. Move the next slide, please. And I wanted to try to do, well, I wanted to talk, I have a lot of things to talk about, but I'm going to try to not take the remainder of your day, and I'm going to focus on the enrollment update and talk briefly about test optional considerations for the institution. But also I wanted to highlight one of our programs. Regent Henson told me that historically the student affairs reports board usually had a component of a highlight program or a student's story, and I wanted to continue that tradition. I think it's very valuable to the institution and to the board to hear some of these wonderful stories. Back to Regent Nichols' comment about making sure we're telling these stories. And so I've invited Dr. Leslie North from our Office of Sustainability to be with me today, and she's got a brief update about her program. So I will start by, next slide, please, to talk a little bit about, you know, the enrollment and student experience division has been as challenged as the rest of us in terms of the shutdown and restart, or the term restart. But we've been pushing forward, and we've been trying to progressively cultivate the philosophical component of our division. That is, engaging our students in our recruitment, engaging our students towards their matriculation, engaging our current students, encouraging them in terms of their commitment to persistence and their academic success, as well as providing for them their co-curricular experiences and the needs that they would like to have throughout their college experience. And so our Connected Outreach has been ongoing through a variety of different programs, like the Adopt a Talker program with the WKU Alumni Program, through Residence Life, where alumni were helping encourage and provide support to some of our students who were stranded in the restart shutdown, and provided them with materials, toiletries, gift cards, fun things like that. It's through phone calls, it's emails, postcards to all of our current students. Each of our divisional units have been engaging their students, their current students that they've been working with throughout the year to try to maintain that connection, maintain delivery of services, financial aid, for example, and continue to provide financial counseling and coordinating that effort. A lot of these in-person and service opportunities on the desk and move to virtual desktop experiences, and we haven't lost a step. Virtual services like even Preston Center. Preston Recreation Center has done some wonderful things with virtual exercise classes, for example, to maintain the delivery of their service despite the fact that we're not in person. And they've done things to promote their students as well, student award programs for spring, graduate recognition programs unique to the student staff and the students who work in these different programs. ISEC does a wonderful job of that as well. When we think about the way that we continue to provide our programs in distance, it's been very interesting, it's been very challenging, but it's been very enlightening and reassuring in terms of what we can do and how we can provide services in a different environment. Orientation and advising for orientation was all virtual this year. Despite that fact, we had advising and orientation of over 3,000 students this next year who are coming to the Hilltop for their college experience. And that's a combination of both our professional advising staff, but also the faculty and the colleges who have been supporting that, the advising faculty and the advising staff from the colleges who have supplemented those conversations. And it's through their work of all these advising staff that we're maintaining the momentum and yielding these students to arrive this fall. It's through professional programs, Colonnade, explaining the Colonnade philosophy and Colonnade experience. And all of these advising programs and protocols have been with personalization and response of all of the students who are coming to the orientation process for contacted individually and individual afterwards with postcards to all our new students. So it's really an exciting way to look at change in delivery, and it has highlighted the operational change potential that we'll take forward with us in the way that we'll promote and pursue our work. As we reopen and we have the opportunity to have more social engagement that is on a personal or in-person level, I should say, be appropriately distanced and masked. We've also learned a great deal of the tools and the abilities we have to continue these conversations with students at distance, at different hours of service, out of traditional timelines, and the way that we're available to our students in different ways. And that's going to be something that is a tool that we'll be able to take with us continuing forward. Now, when we restart and we return to the Hill, we'll still have some of these tools that will be a part of our portfolio and the way we work with our students, and we'll continue to use them. Next slide. So this is just kind of a tribute to some of the friends and faces in our group and division who have been working hard to get out in front of their students and make sure that they're still engaging them, and that we will commit to them going forward. I'm very proud of what this division's done over the course of the shutdown and our preparation for this. Next slide. I'd like to pause for a moment and invite Dr. Leslie North from Earth Environmental Environmental Science and Atmospheric Science. Excuse me. I tore up that name, so please excuse my department's recognition here. Earth Environmental and Atmospheric Science is a faculty member, but also director of our Office of Sustainability, to talk a little bit about what we're doing with students in sustainability administration for this institution.
So, thank you, Dr. Logan, and good morning, everyone. To begin, when most people think about an Office of Sustainability, they think about facilities management or the recycling programs like One Time.
However, since sustainability is a topic that can relate to anyone and is associated in some way with every unit on campus, whether that be IT, whether that be athletics, academic affairs, or facilities operations, in recent years, a decision was made to move the Office of Sustainability from the Division of Facilities Management to Enrollment and Student Experience. This purposeful move was designed in part to allow for better coordination of sustainability activities across all of our three divisions, not just those primarily associated with facilities operations, and to create an opportunity for engaging students of any background, grade level, interest, academic discipline through one of the three pillars of sustainability. And those pillars are social equity, equity earlier, environment, and economic. Next slide, please. So in addition to our unique reporting structure that the PPU adopted for sustainability administration, we are also uniquely located in a home on campus, rather than an administrative building. And this purposeful placement has allowed us to gradually create a sustainability demonstration room on campus so students can visit our office and learn about sustainability firsthand. We also have student groups from grade schools in the area come and visit the office to learn about sustainability, to see community gardens, which I'll talk about in a moment, to take tours of campus, etc. We have many applied experiences for students. It's incorporated into every single aspect of the office operation, from participating in administrative meetings to developing and implementing programs that are implemented through the office. And my role as Director of Sustainability for the DKU is to make sure that we are incorporating students into every single program. So, for example, this past year we worked with interior design students, labor and their faculty mentor to remodel the office. This involved the students not only applying their knowledge of interior design, but they also had to research sustainable furniture designs and what goes into sustainable furniture, something they hadn't thought about previously. They had to work with a client, us, who had a very unique set of needs. They had to figure out ways to develop collaborative spaces, something that they hadn't necessarily done before, and so on. As another example, a sustainability scholarship has been established through the ESC division to fund a grad assistant annually. This scholarship allows an individual who is interested in securing a career in sustainability to get very applied experiences and help build their resume so that they can get gainfully employed after graduation. Specifically, the graduate assistant for the office often accompanies me to meetings to observe and or participate in those meetings. They are responsible for helping oversee the undergraduate student projects that we might be doing in the office to gain some managerial experience. And they even create and implement their own sustainability programs. So again, trying to create those really applied experiences to enhance whatever graduate curriculum they might be learning in their classrooms. Next slide, please. So beyond the demonstration home and tours of the home that we regularly give, there are also several other programs that are specifically done through the Office of Sustainability for the purposes of student engagement. This is not a comprehensive list by any means. This is purely some of the projects that we do in our office. We also very much coordinate with many other programs across campus and the other divisions and units across campus. And try to ensure that students are involved in every single one of those as well, and that's one of my responsibilities. But I wanted to just highlight a couple to give everyone a sense of some of the things that we do and the different things we can do. So, in addition to the demonstration home and campus screen tours, these are actual tours, not just of sustainability in our office, but also sustainability that's going on across campus. In response to COVID, we've been working with students in Ogden College, and particularly students who are interested in geographic information systems, to develop virtual tours of campus as well, so that you don't have to be on campus and students don't have to be in a classroom to engage with sustainability and learn more about it. The Garden Commons, this is community garden space that's located behind our office so that students can quite literally plant roots on campus. Typically, a student interested in agriculture is supported to help coordinate garden activities annually, but for obvious reasons, the gardens aren't both this spring and summer. But we do have two spaces, one behind our office and another behind the foundation room. And that space will be used by the dedicated restaurant group to grow fresh herbs, which will be used in dining services here on campus. And students will be responsible for building this. Our office also offers scholarships to sustainability ambassadors. Annually, we have anywhere from 3 to 6 different ambassadors. These students are tasked with communicating and educating about WQU sustainability through their various passions and academic interests. For example, we have a social media marketing student who coordinates the social media for the office. Another ambassador is working towards a degree in graphics design, so she applies her skill sets to develop graphical educational materials that we distribute. This past year, we also had a student in sports management who coordinates with us and with athletics to develop ways to incorporate sustainability into student-athlete programming. So whenever one of these ambassadors comes on board, our goal is to identify what are their interests, after graduation, what is their major, where do they really see themselves going, and help give them an experience that they can then mark themselves after graduation, but also serve the sustainability of the university. So it can be able to have them in those situations. The Food Recovery Network student organization, this is housed in our office, and I serve as the faculty mentor for that student board. This is in partnership with WKU Restaurant Group, who we work very closely with. The student group collects the end-of-day products nightly from various selected dining facilities on campus, such as Einstein's Bagels. Those products that they collect are then taken to local food banks or to places where hot meals are distributed to members of the community who may be in need of those. This past academic year, to give you a sense of the different diversity of students who are involved with that, there were over 30 students who regularly volunteered, so this isn't a one-off kind of volunteering situation. This is students quite literally every single night they go and collect. Some set of those students go and collect these products. So over 30 different students participated, and those friends represented 21 different majors on campus. So not all friends from any one major or any one college, they really are a diverse group. And in total, that group recovered 3,194 pounds of food from the landfill. So not only does this help supply and address food insecurity issues that we might have in the community, but it also helps reduce the waste disposal fees for the university, because that seems to be prevented from the landfill. The Market on the Avenue, this is a community farmers market concept that was initiated this past year, also in partnership with the WQU Restaurant Group. This is held monthly. It's designed to bring the local community market vendors to campus to give students a venue through which they can showcase their creative talents, such as artwork, photography, jewelry, floral arranging, so whatever it may be. And it also is designed to create a venue through which university offices and programs can set up tables and have demonstrations to, again, just engage our students that we're not just in buildings when we're interacting, but we have these unique kind of opportunities to interact with students. And then finally, I will end with the food pantry, since it has definitely kept us the most busy in these past few months, particularly since the shutdown in March. Next slide, please. So this is just giving you some of the stuff that we've seen in our office. So the Office of Sustainability houses the university's food pantry. This pantry was actually started in 2012, but it was started in basically kind of like a closet space for the Counseling and Life Counseling and Testing Center by a student. It's since evolved, it continues to grow. Since March 20th, we have served 687 different people. Historically, our pantry would only service students, staff, alumni of the university, but in March, a decision was made to expand our services to community members as well, since looking at all of this together, food insecurity is a big issue right now. For obvious reasons. So we expanded those services and we have seen that take in the institution. We are open 7 days a week by appointment, so you quite literally might see us there Sunday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon whenever someone needs us. We'll try to get there as fast as possible to let someone in. We are supported through donations primarily, so SGA, we receive grants, individual donors, food drives have been very helpful, and then community partnerships, so like the community farmers market, we have some farmers who bring us products at the end of the sale, things that they couldn't sell, that they brought to us and distributed. Just in the months of April, May, and June, not since all since March and August, but April, May, and June, we have distributed 7,624 different non-perishable food items, so this does not include any of the perishable goods. We also distribute toiletries, drinks, those sorts of things. That does not include any of that. That is just non-perishable food items that we're looking for and distribute it in those 3 months. So, next slide, please. With that, I will, I think we're going to pause and welcome any questions now, or if you have any questions, please.
Does anyone have any questions? Leslie, very impressive.
Thank you.
Very, very impressive. I had no idea that food bank had, or our food pantry had gotten to be so big and the need was so great. Thank you for giving us those numbers.
Thank you for having us.
Regents, if I could add to that, one of the things we've talked about is continuing to make sure that that's a resource for our whole community. And that even though we may have changed our operations, that they've done yeoman's and yeowomen's work to make that available to our faculty, our staff, our students, our whole community. Food insecurity is a tremendous issue, particularly when you think about the students who come to WKU. You can't learn if you're hungry. And so we need to make sure that we're taking care of every one of our young people and every one of our faculty and our staff. You know, the circumstances of their lives are not just dictated about what happens here at the university. Particularly they have partners and others in the community. And so we want to make sure that we're taking care of our own and anybody else who needs it that we can possibly help. So I think it's just, Leslie, it's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes, glad to do it. Thanks, the team.
It's good seeing you again, Leslie.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
Now, Ethan, you get to follow that up, Ethan.
I know. That's a showstopper.
Yes,
it is. To Leslie, for all she does for the division, but also for this institution and our students, our faculty, our staff, and then our community. She's a full-time faculty member, distinguished in her own right, in her own discipline. And she's doing this as an addition to her role. And we're very fortunate to have her. And so I'll tell Provost Stevens, if you've got more like her, we'll be happy to help include them in our vision too. So thank you very much. We're very excited about this program. It's just one of our programs in the division, but it is. I was impressed when I first came to Western Kentucky University because, I thought that we were stopping at recycling and food pantry. We talk about the extent to which we involve students and faculty across disciplines and the ways that we can cross those lines to incorporate service and enhance learning. I'm really excited about that. And I'm also pleased that we can provide fresh herbs for the restaurant group for our meals on campus. I'd like to talk to you today about enrollment and enrollment update for the fall of 2020. And so I'll provide this update on a quick pace for you because I don't want to run into any longer than necessary. But I do want to make sure that I talk to you about a couple of things and provide you some perspective for this year. So next slide. The concerns that we were hearing as late as a month ago was that this is all contrived and there may not be anybody who shows up this fall because of the pandemic exposure. And that the movement and the engagement that we false in terms of this promise. And those were very good comments and those are very valid comments in terms of what we're looking at. So we started to try to do some investigation and look at what's the perspective. We're showing and tracking great participation and interest in terms of orientation and registration, but with that whole group. Next advance the slide. So we looked at withdrawals of students from the course over the course of the fall in any given year. This is a three-year look. This is a three-year look at withdrawals. So across the top of that table, you see through minus 3 weeks. That's 3 weeks until start. So minus 3 weeks from start in a countdown scenario. We were looking at from the end of the spring semester and registration and the beginning of the orientation season. How many students had withdrawn in 2018, 329, 2019, 338? And then what was the remainder from 3 weeks out to the beginning of the semester? What was the total? That looked like in context of how many students were still historically in withdrawal from the institution after they had gone through the whole process of orientation and registration. So, of course, we don't know what that 3 weeks in total looked like yet for 2020, but you can see already that the withdrawals were down significantly in comparison in terms of where we are on the pace of that trend. And so that bolsters some confidence in the fact that it's not just a presumption that people are just signing up but may not show up. This gives me great confidence that people are signing up, students are signing up and will show up. Advanced again. In fact, what's interesting to see last year in 2019, from 3 weeks out to the beginning of the semester, there was actually 751 additional students who were registered before the first day of classes. So there's still activities going to take place, even the fact that it was 17 days out from the beginning of the semester. So there's still a lot of actions going to take place, and a lot of people are ready to utilize it. Next slide. This is the good old historic funnel performance, and I wanted to provide this for you in context, and you may very well be familiar with the idea of the funnel, the Roman funnel context, for evaluating performance in the recruitment cycle. But you think about it in terms of a fiscal funnel, a large number at the top, a small number at the bottom, that's a funnel towards completion. People who participate in the recruiting process to those who are 5 million. 17, 18, and 19, as you look at those years of what you're seeing, you see a little bit of decline in application, you see a decline in completion and admission, very much in ratio, it's in a relationship where the ratio is consistent in terms of the decline. So if you think about that in context of the recruitment process, the story that this tells is not necessarily, it's not a question about performance necessarily of what the admissions group has been doing or what the people charged with recruiting were doing. Those you can pretty much hold in context of constant, but you need to read into that that there's some changes in terms of market share and in terms of competition. And so what I mean by that is that we have more pull from our potential market share, typically because of competition, it can also be because of programming, and that's a subset of competition. So schools may bring on programs that are more responsive to the demands of labor. There may be more financial incentive opportunities that are coming into our market that are taking away our students. It is also a context of the realities of the potential pool and where our potential pool has been and how our potential pool of students may be changing in terms of the demographics and their geography. And that's definitely something we have to take into consideration in Kentucky as we move forward. We plateau in 2025 and then we're in a slight decline in 2030. And as we look at that in terms of context of the potential pool of students, we have to be reactive to. What this tells me, and what this institution has done before my arrival, was that there was a pivot that needed to take place, and you'll see that during this plan. One other thing that I'll say about it in terms of the lower part of the funnel, it tells a little difference, that though we were in decline in terms of our potential participation, actual participation, you see a continuity or constancy in the yield rate. You see actually a decrease. Now the yield rates, those students who have been and who participated and registered for orientation, who are admitted and who participate in registration. So those who have been invited to attend the institution that actually do attend orientation and register for the classes. And that's been constantly, it's consistent, depending on the variation of about 4%. That's very good in terms of what the national norm is, because we've been seeing for the last 5 years a decrease in yield rate, a decrease in yield rate. And so what you're seeing is a very strong constancy in terms of participation. And then you see a nice decline, or a decline. No. What that tells me is that that there's a lot of hustle going on in the recruitment. And what I mean by that is, I mean that there was a lot of hard work and attention to the students, constant communication, and engagement through the recruitment cycle that it's been able to sustain and yield that kind of melt transition.
Can you just explain what is the top category? What is that?
Yes, sir. The top category is our orientation program. So that's the acronym. soccer orientation program, perhaps.
So those are students who attend one of those orientations.
That's exactly right. And those have historically been in person. This is the first year that we've done them all online. So this is the 2024 in context, to give you some idea of what it looks like in context of a three-year performance. Now, the asterisk there just means that we have yet to conclude. These are numbers based on the census. This is the at-to-date information, so we're still 3 weeks out what that looks like. We've seen some growth in applications and completions of applications. It's actually very constant, and the admission of students have been consistent. But we've had some growth again in orientation, enrollment potential. And that's that first look that you have for the enrollment. That's the current enrollment of first-time, first-year students at the institution for 2020. So, significant gains in yield and significant progress in enrollment. Those are yet to be finalized. Those are still floating numbers. But what's important here is that the transition. And I'd like to attribute that to a variety of factors. But one of the things that's most important is the way that we changed our approach to our merit scholarship program, deliberately changing the program to be open to students outside of qualification by standardized tests, based on high school GPA. And you'll see some of that ripple through in some of these other pieces that you're going to see in this report. So engaging this new merit scholarship program and also working in with our consulting group that we're working with for our strategic enrollment planning. We're also providing this with strategic lead generation. It's helping with those conversations. And, you know, it's always difficult to talk about the idea that we outsource an activity to a consultation, but truly this is the economic factor for us in terms of what we have in staff and resources, which we can outsource to others to a greater extent our generation and success. So finding the appropriate people who are going to participate, and I think that we're seeing some of that. Next slide. One of these slides, the next three successive slides, look at this class, this 2020 class, this freshman, first time, first year in college student class, through a variety of lenses. And what is important about this conversation here is to look at it in terms of ACT composite score generalization by SAT conversion. And look at what that impact about what our student population potential goal was. You'll see a nice lift that goes all the way down to as low as a 14 on ACT score. But you see a lot of activity and engagement. And I really point out, like, for example, an ACT composite of 19, 71 students. What we're seeing here, we're seeing students who are participating in the institution because they're being encouraged through the fact that they are qualified for scholarship. This is probably students who have a 3.0 or higher GPA who fall into that good old conversation about testing, test anxiety, poor test performance, but are in truth very good students and have a great commitment to their education and have been constant. And they haven't had the opportunity to go anywhere because they were not finding any kind of financial incentive due to the fact that one test on one day impacted their ability to actually walk. We've opened up that door at WKU, and I think that you're seeing that across some of the student populations. So you look at that and you say, well, there's a lot of buoyancy and there's still a lot of growth, but it's really kind of in the lower end of our ACT range. You'll see it bumped up to 28, because that's our highest merit scholarship and qualification there. But if you look at the next slide, and we look at this in the context of high school GPA, you can see that that's where he starts to transition and change. So it's not just a question about, there's increased activity with students who may have had lower test scores on average. But buoy that with the fact that we have this exceptional growth in terms of this class, it's all at 3.0 and higher GPA. And so if we look at that, we see that we're compelling the transition of participating in WKU, not just by the idea that you can come to this institution and you're going to be qualified here, but that you can come to this institution because we're going to provide you with financial assistance and support because of your demonstrated academic. The potential. And so our students who qualify for our lowest merit aid score, have a merit scholarship at 3.0 on GPA and without an associated test score. We're changing some ideas about the accessibility for our institution and the penetration that we have in those markets. We're providing students who would have otherwise not have been able to attend a four-year institution because of financial exigency, but were of solid standing in their academic performance, and now their opportunity arises. And that's a really nice piece. And you'll see this as that we're looking at that 3,167 new students in this cohort. We're setting that above 409 students over last year to date. And that's been really nice to see this lift in this freshman class. Next slide, please. Oh, and then that will pay dividends on student success. We have a greater participation, persistence, and retention correlated to high school GPA than we do to test school. And so that's a compelling argument to sustain them choices. This is the academic mission, traces to academic college. I highlight that just to show you all of the college benefit from the enrollment, freshman enrollment, or the incoming student enrollment cycle that we're currently in for 2020. The minus 222 is our experimental, our undecided students. So it's okay if that number is down. Behavioral science, health and services, Ford College, Ogden College, Clark College, overall a lift in this year in terms of what we're looking at over a year to date with numbers. Next slide. And a very interesting but expected turn also is that there's significant, well, the preponderance of this growth that we're seeing in this class this year can be attributed to Kentucky residents. And that is, that's true form. That's true to our mission. That's true to our public responsibility. But it also is very consistent with the conversation about COVID and government's response or impact on higher education and the fact that students are more focused on proximity this year in terms of where they can go to school. We still see some growth in Tennessee and in Illinois and Indiana, but for the most part, that greatest growth we see, it's in Kentucky. And that is, again, I would like to, it's attributable to our choices we made about providing financial assistance to students and becoming students who may not otherwise have found that in an institution market.
Ethan, can I contextualize that a little bit? So one of the questions that we've asked ourselves is how much of this is because of externalities and COVID, how much of it is because of the work we've done. Before March 10th, we were up well over 300 enrolled students. And so that trend has just gotten larger, not smaller. But we were well above trend before any of this changed the conversation.
Thank you, sir. Sorry. I want to actually leave this out here for your digestion because I'm still so new in Texas that I know a few of the counties, but perhaps you have a particular favorite. You will see some, and being red is as simple as it can be, just as up or down. And some of those that are down, for example, could be down in Christian County. They're one student lower than last year. So it's not cause for alarm, but you can kind of see the penetration in terms of participation across Kentucky. You can see our growth and development in Tennessee. And some growth and some participation in Indiana, even all the way up into Ohio. And so those are exciting things. I will say, for Regent Henson's benefit, that we have 87, we're up 87 in Warren, and only 80 in Jefferson. So I'm hoping that she finds 8 more folks in Jefferson County to come to WKU this fall.
I'll start calling people tonight. I also would like to mention that of those incoming freshmen, the Greater Louisville Alumni Chapter in Louisville awarded 12 students, freshman students, each $5,000. So we were able, our chapter was able to raise the money and award $12,000 in scholarships for students to attend WKU as first-time students this year, or this fall.
Thank you.
But I'll start working on that number, Ethan. Is this a dare or a challenge? I think I need to start working on Oldham County a little bit for us too.
I think so. Anything I can do to help, please don't hesitate to answer.
Thank you.
So this is, I think this is really nice. That is, we're staying in the context of what is a regional institution. We're not limited by the boundaries of Kentucky. Yes, we need to pay great attention to Kentucky and provide for our Kentucky residents, but our reach kind of extends a little bit beyond just southern Kentucky. Next slide. Lastly, I wanted to provide this information here, which in contact with that list of students over the last year. This is a top registration, so this is students who participated in orientation, and this is a racial ethnic breakdown of our student population. And we've got gains across all of our different demographies. That's a compelling piece, that's an important piece, and that's an important part of who we are as an institution, diversification and involvement in education that we are responsible for as a society as a whole. And that's, that growth is compelling, and I want to let you know that we're not losing enrollment growth or gain at the expense of the one student. Next slide, please. So our present state is compounded by a couple of factors. Student success, graduation, time for graduation improving, and those are fantastic. In fact, the wonderful thing about that is that students are graduating at a quicker pace, and that our retention and our persistent numbers are increasing. Now, that has to be coupled with a caveat that we made a conscious decision not to remove students, to cancel students from the financial balance this spring, and that we chose not to suspend students with an academic suspension policy this spring and allow them to return due to the checkbook. This spring, we voted for all. And so our retention numbers and persistent numbers are high, a little higher than they probably would be, regardless, because of those things, but that just gives us an opportunity to actually reach out and retain these students. And then we've also been working through what I call a bilateral contraction in terms of our enrollment growth. And that is that we have enrollment success in terms of what we're looking at for this next year on enrollment growth, but we've also had 3 years of declining enrollment, so we have to ride those bubbles of enrollment through the cycle, life cycle. And so they, as they progress through the sophomore, junior, senior years, you see sometimes that those may be even or below. And I say that just to say that when you look at, for example, the sophomore level of undergraduate students in August 1st, 2020, and you see that it's 2376 versus 2259, that's not necessarily that we've lost all those students. It's just that that is also a smaller population that's coming through the state. But right now, when we look at all undergraduate, all graduate, the total enrollment right now, present, this is not final enrollment. This is where we're sitting in terms of participation. This is by registration. And we've got a few days left before we're final. But this is what the concept of the classes is looking like across all of our student population. And I would be happy to entertain questions about enrollment, but I want to talk one more moment about test optionality. Next slide.
Ethan, before you go on, can you talk about year-over-year retention and what that's looking like in terms of percentage numbers?
Yes, sir. We are looking at, I think the retention rate is forecast, I think, about 77%. We're looking at a year-over-year increase in retention that's approaching 1.5% over the last year, and that's across total student population. That's monumental, even though it's 1.5%, that's monumental movement in terms of the idea of retention across and persistence of students across all classifications. And so this will be a profound year in terms of persistence and attention to submission. Like I said, there's a slight caveat in the fact that it could be slightly inflated because of the fact that we didn't cancel students who would normally be canceled or suspend students who would normally be suspended. That's a greater opportunity for us to find funding to make sure that they can be continuous for those students who didn't have the financial clearance, and it's an opportunity for us students who were in academic poor performance to rally and recover those students. So those gains are an important part of what the role of enrollment management in terms of persistence and retention are. We'll be focused on those this next year for sure. Test optionality. This is a very poignant and important conversation that is consistently in the higher education milieu right now across the country. And that is whether or not we should continue to use testing, standardized testing, as a means of admission consideration for institutions in higher education. Western Kentucky took a bold step this last, I think, coming into the second year of changing the way that we award merit scholarship based upon academic performance. And we looked at that in context that we were awarding academic performance, merit awards based on academic performance, based on high school performance of these students. But we were also had a gatekeeper who met with the standardized test score in nature. That transition from moving that piece, all of our high school board opened up participation, I think, that you will see this next year that's been enhanced because of that choice. One of the things that we need to think about moving forward is whether or not we continue to use that as a component of our admission consideration for students. There's a number of member schools, both public and independent, country who are changing their ideas about what is their choice for test optionality, whether it's going to be something that they suspend for a year or two, or that's going to be something that's a transition to a permanent change for institutions. But we've already taken the step of de-emphasizing the role of standardized testing for admission, I'm sorry, for scholarship qualification. And the compelling argument here is that there's been significant and complicated challenges to testing access for students during the pandemic outbreak. There's been tests canceled, there's been testing locations that have been suspended, or rescheduled or relocated. And there's been limited access to students in preparatory work for standardized testing if they are challenged by, for example, their access to broadband, internet, and their ability to access the resources, or further resources such as testing prep and counseling and coaching. The idea being that we can take an opportunity, what we've done with the scholarship and moving forward, the predominant argument this year for test optionality is the fact that there was so many canceled tests and students have not had a chance to test. But I think that we've already de-emphasized testing in terms of our scholarship, that we should consider that we become a test optional institution for admission going forward. High school GPA is a better predictor of student success. The challenge with that is that GPA is variable and that there's not a constancy here between one high school and the next, and whether or not the curriculum is consistent, the rating and rubric is consistent. Nonetheless, that overall GPA is a successful indicator that outperforms standardized test scores. And there's an opportunity to increase accessibility without sacrificing academic success, and I think we're seeing that in terms of our demonstration for American scholarship. The proposed plan for test optionality for WKU, if you would make some slides, is to do standardized test scores will not be required for any students applying to primary high school GPA 2.5 or 3. And this is, we're borrowing a lot of this structural format based upon the state's requirement for admission, which require 2.5. And then students with less than 2.5 would be required to submit a score. Now, when we talk about the requirement of submitting a score, about an ACT or SAT score, this is predominantly done for two reasons. One, first of all, Kentucky is an ACT state, and all students in the state are given the opportunity to take the test at least once. and they have ACT testing days. So the accessibility piece is there. More importantly is that the ACT and SAT are recognized standardized testing pieces, which are used to demonstrate college readiness. There's other ways of doing college readiness demonstrations, such as independent standardized examination protocols like ACT/PLACER, but ACT and SAT have what we consider standardized college readiness interventions. So the idea that students in Kentucky will have the opportunity to take the ACT, whether or not they need it for admission to the state, to WKU, they will have it in terms of demonstrating college readiness. And those students under a 2.5 have to have demonstrated college readiness for the state information. So that's the kind of the concept with Kumba, our idea of test optional. Not that we're not test optional to all students, but we're test optional in the context of the Kentucky Council for Public Post-Secondary Education's admissions. Presently, we've had this conversation with the cabinet and with the provost on the idea of becoming test optional. We have a submission and a request for review and endorsement from the faculty senate. And I hope that if everyone agrees, that we can take the step. Okay, next slide. Should round out my presentation. I appreciate very much this opportunity to speak to you all and to talk a little bit about our enrollment perspective this year. It's a very promising and very exciting perspective that we paint going into this fall. There's one thing that I've been able to take from this is that this demonstrated passion and determination for return from students is palpable and it's very, very compelling in terms of the desire for students to return to the normalcy of education. I hope that that's a piece that we can use that excitement and that energy to make sure we do it safely, and that's going to be a challenge that we continue to work with, of course. But I have great faith and confidence in our students in this. Any questions or comments that I can make?
Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, I just want to say the work that has been done is extremely remarkable, and getting to see those numbers today just reiterates all the hard work of administration and everyone involved in this process. You know, as a student, that's great to see. Really, anybody that loves WKU, that's great to see. So just want to commend that work again, and thank you for all you've done so far, Dr. Logan, and welcome to the Hill.
Thank you, Richard.
I'd like to make a comment, too. I think the enrollment increase in the freshman class is remarkable, and I think it reflects the decisions that have been described. It's been put in place the last few years. It leaves me thinking how much needs to the balance with how we handle our restart and the pandemic, and I just hope that we can rise to the occasion and pivot when necessary and handle this in a way that all those students not only come, but have a good experience and come back. So it's going to take a real team effort the next few months.
I have some questions about.
Didn't need to ask Tom or no. I mean, he's been making some bread. That's a lot of work.
I have some questions about the slides. You had the slide where you showed the minority thing, but I wasn't quick enough to actually check if the percentage of 8.1, if that has increased or not. Do you know?
I don't know if we can pull it back up. The overall, did you ask me, sir? I'm sorry.
Well, when we had this presentation earlier, it showed that we declined to 8.1% of underrepresented minorities as a percentage of students, and I wanted to see if this freshman class increased that percentage or not. And I wasn't quick enough to get the right numbers out, so.
We'll work our way right back to it.
So
yes, So the previous presentation is.
That was a slide, exactly.
That may be the total student enrollment. So you have to excuse me because I don't know if that was total student enrollment or not. This is just going to be looking at race and ethnicity of our freshman registrants and orientation this year.
So African Americans as a percentage of 2019 cohort was 11.7%. So if you divide 325 by 2758 and then
347 divided by 3
divided by 3167 equals 10.9%. So you're seeing growth, a little bit more growth with white students versus African American. I think the other part to that is Latinx students. That growth of 25%, when you think about the demographic trend in the state, and we'll do the math on those as well as a percentage of. This is not just the right thing to do. This is good business.
Yeah. The Hispanic students, should then be included? And so in your calculation, you did not, right?
I did not, right. Just did.
And so that went up quite
it did.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it may change a little bit, but it would be nice to have maybe a follow-up number which tells us where we stand. And then if you could go back a little bit to the other slide about the ACT scores. And my question was looking at the high-end scores, and does that include the Gatton students? No, right?
No.
Okay. Because otherwise I thought these numbers should be larger. That's basically the question.
Absolutely. These are just first-year students, just gain in them, and does not include high school or Gatton. We include those. Sometimes folks say, well, what's the difference between the 15,000 number and the 19,000 number or almost 20,000 number that we use? One is everybody counting everyone all in, but you can't manage from that. So this is the management number.
So for the rest of you, the Gatton average should be around 34, 33, right? And there should be basically 90 students from Gatton alone. Mm-hmm. We don't see 90 students here. That's basically what it's asking. Thank you.
Is that all for Ethan? Thank you, Ethan. I always say I have the best committee. And always an honor to be the chair of it.
Thank you, Regent Gibson.
Can I just hear
you? Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sorry.
Thank I was you. Just smiling underneath my mask.
I got you. We'll move into our other business announcement section. We followed the recommendation of the nomination committee and made committee assignments. I think we've got a screenshot of that potentially coming up, and then you'll get an email as well, is my understanding. Screenshot. So we'll use that committee structure for the new year. As far as announcements, convocations on August 17th, 10 to 10:15 virtual Zoom link availability. Encourage the regents to tune in for that. You should have gotten an email earlier this morning providing you with that information and link. Our next committee meetings will be on October 23rd, 2020. Our fourth quarterly meeting will be December 11th, 2020. And I've been advised that there are box lunches available for those of us in attendance. And be sure to pick up one as we leave. That being said, Dr. Boney, any wrap up from your end?
It's an important 3 weeks. Restart on the 24th, hundreds and thousands of people have worked and sacrificed since March 10th to get us to a place where we have a shot to do this. But beginning on next week with MOVEN, it's going to be on each one of us. And so for the community, I just want to say thank you for everything that you've done, the sacrifices that our faculty and staff have made, and for our students, that we're going to need this semester not to look like any other semester we've had. And so thank you to Will for his proactive work with our students to help them understand. If you hear one thing, wear a mask, stay 6 feet apart, and wash your hands. And the temptations that students sometimes fall for with things that occur outside of our control, this is going to be a year we need them not to succumb to that temptation for off-campus gatherings or other types of engagements that bring people together.
Any of the Regents have an announcement or comment they would like to make? I want to thank all of the Regents and the administration staff, faculty, for their efforts over this, again, unprecedented times. We fully support your efforts and wish you well as you start back on August 24th. If there's no other matters, then that will conclude our meeting for today. Thank you very much. Thank you.